Welcome to the Quarterly Briefing, where we take a closer look at the financial stories behind the world's biggest public companies, powered by AI to make it smarter, faster, and more engaging. Our goal is to make financial data more accessible by demystifying the complexities of corporate finance and informing people about the dynamics of today's markets. This podcast is not financial advice. It's for entertainment and educational purposes only. If you're curious about how companies grow, stumble, or pivot in today's fast-paced markets, you're in the right place. This is the Quarterly Briefing, where AI meets numbers and numbers meet narrative.
Welcome to the deep dive, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
You know, today we're taking a look at MetLife.
Okay.
And we're doing a deep dive into their third quarter 2024 Form 10-Q filing.
Oh, wait.
And I think this is really interesting because MetLife's such a big player.
Huge.
In the insurance and finance world.
Mm-hmm.
That looking at them can actually give us some pretty good insight.
Yeah.
Into the broader trends going on in the global economy.
Exactly. I totally agree.
So, you know, we're going to be looking at some really interesting things.
Yeah.
Like their investment portfolio.
Okay.
Which is incredibly diverse.
Oh, yeah.
And also some of the challenges they're facing, like with things like asbestos-related claims.
Yeah.
And just how they're dealing with all these new regulations that are coming up in the insurance industry.
Absolutely, yeah.
So let's start with the basics.
Okay.
You know, this 10-Q is a goldmine of information.
Huge.
Really is.
Yeah.
It has everything.
Right.
So where should we even start?
Well, you know, one of the things that really jumps out at me right away is just how massive MetLife is.
It's huge.
I mean, just to give you an idea of the scale here.
Okay.
The filing tells us that MetLife, Inc. went public back in 2000 after converting from a mutual life insurance company called Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, or MLIC.
Wow.
And as of October 28th, 2024, they had over 692 million shares of common stock outstanding.
That's a lot of shareholders to keep happy.
Yeah, that's a lot of people to answer to.
Absolutely. So before we get lost in all these numbers,
right?
Can you give us like a quick overview of how their business is actually structured?
Yeah, so they actually operate through several key segments.
Okay.
You've got group benefits,
mm-hmm.
retirement income solutions, which is called RIS.
Okay.
Then there's Asia, Latin America, EMEA, and MetLife Holdings.
Okay.
And then they also have the segment called corporate and other, and that includes things like, you know, startup ventures and their global investment management business.
Okay.
So they've got their fingers in a lot of different pies.
Yeah, it's like a financial octopus reaching everywhere.
Exactly.
But what about their actual bottom line?
Right.
You know, how did they actually do in Q3 2024?
Yeah, so the filing shows that they had a 5% decrease in adjusted premiums, fees, and other revenues compared to the same period last year.
Okay.
So at first glance, that might sound a little bit alarming.
Right.
But I think it's important to dig a little deeper.
I'm all ears.
So first of all, this decline was partially offset by growth in some of their segments.
Okay.
Like, for example, retirement income solutions.
Yeah.
And then we also have to consider the global economic picture because things like fluctuations in long-term interest rates and the weakening of the U.S. dollar against the Japanese yen actually ended up having a positive impact.
Interesting.
On their net derivative gains.
Now, I got to be honest.
Sure.
Derivatives are one of those things that always kind of make my head spin a little bit.
I understand.
Could you break that down for me into something that's a little easier to understand?
So think of derivatives as contracts.
Okay.
Okay. That basically derive their value from something else.
Okay.
Like an underlying asset or index. So for example, MetLife might use derivatives to hedge against currency fluctuations or interest rate risk.
Right.
And in this case, those shifts in interest rates actually ended up working in their favor
and
boosting their gains.
Okay, so it's not as simple as just looking at that top line revenue number.
Exactly.
There are all these other forces at play that can really affect how those numbers look.
Absolutely.
And speaking of complex things, there's this other piece that I saw that I wanted to ask you about, which is market risk benefit remeasurement.
Right?
Now, that sounds pretty complicated.
It is a bit of a mouthful.
Can you walk me through that one?
Yeah. So essentially, MetLife offers products like annuities where they guarantee certain benefits to policyholders. And when interest rates fall, it becomes more expensive for MetLife to actually fulfill those guarantees.
I see.
Down the road.
Okay.
Think of it like this.
Okay.
You're trying to fill a bucket,
mm-hmm.
but instead of a steady stream of water, you've only got like a slow drip.
Okay.
It's going to take a lot longer.
Yeah.
And potentially cost you more.
Gotcha.
So that's reflected as an unfavorable change in their market risk benefit remeasurement.
Okay. So even though those low interest rates help them with their derivative gains,
yeah,
they also created a potential issue.
Exactly.
With their guaranteed benefit products.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real balancing act.
Absolutely.
Now, are you ready?
I think so.
To delve into this massive investment portfolio we mentioned earlier.
Oh, yeah. Let's get into it.
I was looking through it.
Oh,
it's really quite something.
It's incredibly diverse.
It really is.
Yeah.
They have investments in everything.
It's amazing.
It seems like.
Yeah.
So let's start breaking this down.
Sure.
What's the deal with these fixed maturity securities?
So basically, think of these as bonds.
Okay.
Essentially, it's MetLife lending money to governments or corporations.
Okay.
And those loans provide them with a steady stream of income.
Okay.
And are generally considered to be less risky than stocks.
Okay. So it's like a safe bet.
Relatively speaking.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, as an insurance company.
Right.
They need to have some of that stability.
Absolutely.
To be able to meet their long-term obligations to policyholders.
Yeah, they need to be able to pay out those claims when they come due.
Exactly.
So,
and then what about their equity holdings?
Well, equities represent a smaller portion
okay.
of their portfolio compared to those fixed maturity securities.
Okay.
But they do have a pretty diversified mix of stocks, and this allows them to participate in potential market growth.
Okay.
But of course, that also comes with greater risk.
So it's all about finding that balance.
Exactly. Risk and reward.
Right.
They always go hand in hand.
And, speaking of risk and reward, what about their investments in mortgage loans and real estate?
Right. So they're actually a really big player in commercial mortgages.
Okay.
And they've got significant investments in both agricultural and residential loans as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
So seems like they're really bullish on real estate.
It does seem that way.
Is that a safe bet in the current market, though?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is.
You know, their real estate holdings are very diverse.
Okay.
They range from properties that they own outright.
Mm-hmm.
To joint ventures and real estate funds.
Okay.
And they generate income from all sorts of sources like leases and property sales.
Right.
But just like with any real estate investment.
Yeah.
There are risks.
Okay.
Associated with market fluctuations and property values.
So it's a calculated gamble.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. That could potentially pay off big time.
It could.
Now, you mentioned something earlier.
Yeah.
That I wanted to circle back to.
Okay.
Which is private equity investments.
Right.
It seems like they've been increasing their exposure to this area.
They have.
What's the thinking behind that?
So private equity can be a bit of a wild card.
Okay.
Because it offers the potential for really high returns,
mm-hmm.
but it also comes with less liquidity.
Okay.
Which means it's harder to quickly buy or sell those investments.
Right.
So it seems like MetLife is betting on the long-term potential of private equity.
Interesting.
Even if it means, you know, riding out some short-term volatility.
It's a bold move, for sure.
It is.
And then there are those tax equity investments.
Right.
Which, I gotta say,
yeah,
really caught my attention.
It's not something you see every day.
You don't often see insurance companies dabbling in things like renewable energy projects.
Right, yeah.
It's pretty unique.
It is.
So how do those work?
Well, tax equity investments typically involve funding projects that generate tax credits.
Okay.
So things like low-income housing or renewable energy initiatives.
Interesting.
So these investments, they can offer potential financial returns.
Okay.
But they also allow MetLife to kind of align themselves with some socially responsible initiatives.
Yeah, it seems like a win-win.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, they get the financial benefits.
Right.
And some positive PR as well.
Exactly.
Now, I imagine valuing these investments, especially those private equity and tax equity ones, must be a real challenge.
It's definitely not straightforward.
Yeah.
MetLife uses a whole bunch of different valuation techniques.
Okay.
They rely on both observable and unobservable inputs.
Okay.
So observable inputs are things like market prices for publicly traded securities.
Right. Those are easy to track.
Exactly.
But what about unobservable inputs?
So unobservable inputs require a little bit more judgment and estimation.
Oh, okay. So there's some subjectivity involved.
To a certain extent, yes.
Okay.
So when you're dealing with assets that aren't traded on a daily basis,
yeah,
MetLife's management has to make some assumptions,
okay,
about how the market would actually value those investments.
Right.
So that introduces a certain level of uncertainty into the whole process.
Yeah, I'm starting to see how complex this all really is.
Oh,
it's like,
yeah,
we're looking behind the curtain,
exactly,
of those financial statements and realizing that
it's not all black and white.
There's a lot of human judgment involved.
There is, absolutely.
It's fascinating.
It really is.
And it's a good reminder that even in the world of high finance,
mm-hmm,
it's not just about numbers.
It's more than that.
It's about interpretation,
yeah,
analysis,
right,
and a lot of decision making.
A lot of really informed decision making.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really is fascinating to see all the different factors that come into play,
mm-hmm,
when making these investment decisions. And speaking of complex things,
right,
what about the risks,
yeah,
and regulations,
mm-hmm,
that MetLife is facing?
Right.
You know, I imagine a company of their size.
Oh, I have to be get this.
Super vigilant.
Yeah, the insurance industry is heavily regulated,
mm-hmm,
and MetLife is no exception.
Okay.
And, you know, one particular challenge that they're facing,
okay,
are these asbestos-related claims.
Oh, yeah.
That stem from their past.
Right, from when they were MLIC.
Exactly, Metropolitan Life Insurance Company.
Right.
So these claims are kind of like ghosts of the past coming back to haunt them.
Yeah, so it seems like MLIC was involved in asbestos-related activities decades ago.
Yeah, way back when.
And now those actions are leading to legal claims against MetLife.
That's right.
That sounds like a pretty big liability.
It is.
Yeah. How are they handling it?
Well, the filing indicates that they're constantly evaluating their exposure,
okay,
and setting aside reserves to cover potential costs. But the thing about asbestos-related claims is that they can be really unpredictable,
right,
and drag on for years.
It's long tail.
Exactly. So it's definitely something they need to keep a close eye on.
So it's like a wild card,
yeah,
they have to constantly be aware of.
Right.
Aside from these legacy issues, though,
yeah,
what other regulatory hurdles are they facing?
So the whole insurance industry is grappling with a bunch of new regulations,
mm-hmm,
and MetLife is right in the thick of it.
Okay.
For example, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, or NAIC,
okay,
is putting a lot more emphasis on evaluating risks,
okay,
associated with CLOs.
CLOs. And remind me what those are again?
Collateralized loan obligations.
Okay.
So essentially they're bundles of corporate loans.
Okay.
Packaged together and sold off to investors.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be pretty complex, okay, and carry the certain level of risk.
Right.
Hence the increased scrutiny from NAIC.
Gotcha. So MetLife needs to be really careful.
Yeah.
About how they invest in CLOs.
Absolutely.
And make sure they're properly accounting for the risks.
Yeah.
And then there's also this whole thing.
Yeah.
About the growing use of artificial intelligence,
oh,
or,
yeah,
AI in underwriting.
Exactly.
And I know New York,
mm-hmm,
where MetLife is headquartered,
right,
has issued some guidelines.
Say half.
For insurers on how they can use AI.
Right.
Without, you know, discriminating against consumers.
Exactly. It's a really important consideration
for,
because,
sure,
AI has the potential to completely revolutionize underwriting.
Yeah.
But we need to make sure it's being used responsibly and ethically.
Absolutely. And what about, yeah, ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act?
Right. So there have been some changes to ERISA.
Okay.
And those changes could really impact how MetLife sells products,
okay,
to retirement investors. So, okay, that's another layer of complexity.
It seems like they have to be on top of so much.
Oh, yeah. They've got a lot on their plate.
Just in terms of regulations.
Right.
And then, of course, we can't forget about,
yeah,
the SEC's new climate-related disclosure requirements.
Right. So those are currently on hold.
Right.
But they're definitely something MetLife is watching closely.
Yeah. Climate risk is a hot topic these days.
Absolutely.
And investors are demanding a lot more transparency.
Yeah. They want to know how companies are managing these risks.
Exactly. So it seems like MetLife, mm-hmm, is operating in a really dynamic regulatory environment.
They are. Yeah.
And just being able to adapt,
mm-hmm,
and plan carefully,
right,
are so important.
They're essential for success.
Absolutely.
In this industry.
Okay, so let's switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
And talk about how MetLife manages its capital and liquidity.
Okay, yeah.
These are obviously crucial elements for any financial institution.
Mm-hmm.
but especially for an insurance company.
Right, because they need to be able to meet their obligations to policyholders.
Exactly.
So one of MetLife's main sources of capital
is
dividends paid by their subsidiaries. But those dividends, especially those from U.S. insurance subsidiaries, are subject to some regulatory limitations.
So they can't just rely on those dividends as a free-flowing source of funds.
Right. They have to work within the guidelines set by the regulators.
What other tools do they use?
So they use a combination of different strategies, including share repurchases and debt issuance.
Okay. Can you break those down for me?
Sure.
Like share repurchases, I know that means they're buying back their own stock.
Right.
But how does that help them?
So when a company buys back its own shares, it reduces the number of outstanding shares in the market.
Right.
And that can boost earnings per share.
Okay.
And make the stock more attractive to investors.
So it's a way to return value to shareholders.
Yeah.
And potentially boost their stock price.
Exactly.
What about debt issuance?
So debt issuance is a pretty common practice
for
companies to raise capital.
Okay.
So essentially, MetLife is borrowing money from investors and promising to repay it with interest.
Okay.
It does add to their debt burden.
Right.
But it also gives them the funds they need to invest in growth opportunities, manage their operations, and meet their financial obligations.
Oh, they're always kind of balancing this inflow of capital from dividends and debt issuance with the outflow of capital for things like share repurchases, dividends to their own shareholders, and just their day-to-day operating expenses.
It's all about finding that equilibrium.
Yeah. It's like managing a giant financial ecosystem.
Yeah, it is.
And making sure all the pieces are working together.
It's a complex puzzle.
Well, you've done a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you.
Walking us through all these intricate details.
Well, it's been a fascinating journey.
I feel like I have a much clearer picture of MetLife's financial landscape.
I'm glad to hear that.
You know, before we wrap up, what are some of the key takeaways you want to leave our listeners with? Okay, so I think the first takeaway is just the sheer scale and diversity of MetLife's investment portfolio.
Right.
It really speaks to their strategic approach to managing risk and seeking returns in this really complex global market.
It's like they're not putting all their eggs in one basket.
Exactly.
They're spreading things out.
Right, they're diversifying.
And then the second key takeaway
is
just this ever-evolving regulatory landscape.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, MetLife,
like
all insurance companies, is constantly navigating all these different rules and regulations.
There's a lot to keep track of.
From climate risk and AI to fiduciary responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot.
And accounting standards.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It is.
So they have to be adaptable and proactive.
Right. They have to stay ahead of the curve.
Absolutely. It's a good reminder that the financial world is not static.
No, it's constantly changing.
It's always evolving.
Mm-hmm.
What else stands out to you?
Well, I think despite the decline in adjusted revenue, MetLife's proactive approach to capital management and risk mitigation really suggests that they're focused on the long term.
Right. They're not just chasing those quick profits.
Exactly.
They're trying to build something sustainable.
Right. A business that can stand the test of time.
And that's got to be reassuring for their shareholders.
Oh, absolutely.
And their policyholders.
Yeah. They want to know that the company is going to be around for the long haul.
It sounds like they're playing the long game.
They are.
And I think that's a really valuable lesson for anyone interested in finance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sustainable success requires that balance of looking at the risks.
Absolutely.
But also the opportunities.
You have to consider both.
Absolutely.
The short-term gains and the long-term stability.
Exactly. You know, as we were going through this 10Q, one thing that really stood out to me was their involvement in tax equity investments. It's not every day you see a big insurance company like MetLife diving headfirst into things like low-income housing and renewable energy.
It is interesting.
It really is.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, does this signal like a bigger shift in the industry?
It might.
Where more companies are starting to recognize the potential, both financial and social, in these kinds of investments.
I think it's definitely possible as investors and consumers are becoming more and more focused on these ESG factors.
ESG, right. Environmental, social, and governance.
Exactly. Yeah. Companies like MetLife are really feeling the pressure to show that they're committed to sustainability.
Right.
And tax equity investments are a way to do that.
Yeah.
While also potentially generating some pretty attractive returns.
It's a smart move.
It is.
You know, they boost their ESG credentials and they potentially tap into some new markets and revenue streams.
Right. It's a win-win.
It really is.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe we should do a whole deep dive.
Oh, yeah.
On tax equity investment sometime.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. I think our listeners would be interested.
I think so, too.
In learning more about
that. It's a fascinating area.
It is. It's a whole niche area.
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. We'll add that to our list of future deep dives.
Sounds good.
But I think for now, we've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
When it comes to MetLife's financial landscape.
I think so.
We've explored their business segments, their performance in the last quarter, that incredibly diverse investment portfolio.
Right.
The risks and regulations they face.
Absolutely.
And even their capital and liquidity management strategies.
It's been a very thorough deep dive.
It really has.
Yeah.
So I think our listeners now have a much deeper understanding.
Yeah.
Not only of MetLife's position.
Right.
But also the trends that are shaping the insurance and finance industries as a whole.
I think that's a great point. It's been really interesting to kind of get this behind the scenes look.
It has.
At how these big companies are operating.
Absolutely. Well, on that note.
Yeah.
I think we'll wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And remember, the financial world is always changing.
It is.
So stay curious.
Yeah.
Keep learning.
Keep exploring.
And we'll see you next time for another deep dive.
Sounds good.
Into a fascinating corner of the market.
This is the Quarterly Briefing, a W Section podcast production. This podcast was generated completely with AI. If you like the podcast, please give us a like and tell your friends. If you have feedback or different companies you would like us to include in a future episode, please send us an email at idea@quarterlybriefing.com. Thank you for listening. This is the Quarterly Briefing, a W Section podcast production. This podcast was generated completely with AI. If you like the podcast, please give us a like and tell your friends. If you have feedback or different companies you would like us to include in a future episode, please send us an email at idea@quarterlybriefing.com. Thank you for listening.